He's got so many stories to tell.
He offered me a BRC show bag, but that wasn't enough to get me over the line.
He loves the punt.
He is not just even money, he's $1.70. So my religion says take him on.
He's not afraid of airing his opinions.
I'm plotting her today.
On Racing Pulse, it's Turfy time.
Ah, yes, it is Turfy time with the man who is not afraid to have an opinion. And it is so good to have Turfy involved throughout the Spring Carnival on Spring Ticket. He was seeing them like watermelons on Saturday at Flemington. How are you, Turfy?
I'm good. I'm just recovering. But that was a long day, Saturday.
That's the longest you've worked in years.
Very funny. But it was very, very nice to be there and to see a crowd there. Hadn't really been at a carnival for, I guess it was 3 years for all of us. And it was just nice.
And the atmosphere was good. The weather was great. And hopefully, we've been talking about this throughout the year on our program with Matty Stewart about the question mark about crowds. What's your gut feeling when the big events come round, the big days come round, will the crowds come back?
Well, they certainly did with the footy.
Yeah.
Whether we can sort of relate that to our sport. But it seemed to be pretty solid on the weekend. You know, I'm sure the industry is equally as concerned with turnover than with crowds. And, you know, turnover obviously got that huge adrenaline hit with COVID. You know, because there was one point in time early in the first lockdown when Australian racing across all three codes was the only sport in the world. So if we didn't get a sort of a revenue hit with that, and we maintained it all through COVID, and to the industry's credit, it was so well done. You know, the COVID protocols and all that sort of stuff were so well adhered to, and the industry really got together and we got through. I mean, I remember speaking to Mark Pakula early on and I said, how long have we got? And he said, well, till the first case. It won't be that long, but till the first case. Well, it never happened. So now that we're all post-COVID and life's sort of back to normal again, what's the revenue going to be like this carnival and in 6 months' time?
Well, the discretionary punter, you would imagine things will get tighter. Inflation, interest rates, other opportunities to spend your money on holidays and other factors as well.
Yeah, I think so. And also as a punter, maybe it's a little bit insular. But in the past 4 or 5 years, we've seen race field legislation all, you know, with therefore taxes on the corporate bookmakers and so forth. And then we've had the point of consumption tax being an Australia-wide initiative by governments to raise more revenue through racing. And I guess rightfully so, those taxes were passed, every last bit of them, onto us, the punter. You could see that by percentages with markets. And you sort of wonder, could it be a case of be careful of what you wish for? Because, you know, like, with lower dividends, which is the immediate impact of higher taxes on punters, lower dividends because of more competitive markets, if you like, or more competitive for the corporate provider, that means it's harder to win and you're going to win less. So how's that going to be reflected in 6 months' time, in 2 years' time, with turnover, because punters are finding it a little bit more difficult to keep their head above water?
We'll find out how it tracks throughout the Spring Carnival, because I think Underwood Stakes Day was down a little bit, I think, year on year.
And what a great day that was.
We haven't got figures yet from Flemington on Saturday. No, it was brilliant, wasn't it?
Hey, it wouldn't be too brilliant if you're trying to see the demise of Sandown. But I think I just had this feeling that that fabulous meeting at Sandown on Underwood Stakes Day really shone a light on what a great facility it is. And when I say facility, what a great racetrack it is. It's a workhorse during winter. A big workhorse during winter. You know, I know there's the two tracks here, Hillside and Lakeside. But then at the end of a long winter, to present a surface like that where you've had alligator blood lead all the way, you've had horses come from the rear of the field and compete. And you know something else about Sandown, and don't underestimate this. You can see horses at the 1,600-metre mark just as easy as you can at the 300-metre mark. It's such a great viewing track. It's a great track to watch races at, both in person and also on the telly. Don't underestimate the relevance of that.
Well, I'm looking forward to this summer autumn period, because with Caulfield under renovations, all of the meetings are going to Sandown. Blue Diamond will be moved to Sandown and other features, so it's going to be fabulous. We're going to have a chat now to Lizzie Jelz, who is racing.com Channel 7 superstar, who I believe... Good morning, Lizzie. How are you?
Very well, Michael. How are you?
I believe you had a meeting with Turfy on Saturday.
Don't embarrass me. I called Lizzie. I just had a mental block and called Lizzie Jane, I think. And I've worked with Lizzie before, actually on RSN, and it was just one. Yeah, I felt bad about it all week, Lizzie.
Did you? Yeah, John,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
okay.
John. Hello. That's what my mum called
me. Did you correct him straight away, Lizzie?
No,
he corrected himself, and then I called him John.
Yeah, and Emma Friedman Emma Friedman nearly fell over, and Emma I've known since she was a kid. So yeah, it was one of those awkward moments, Lizzie, and I still feel bad about it.
That's fine.
Well, while you're feeling a little awkward, I want to ask you, Lizzie, because you own plenty of horses, and you've had friends that have owned plenty of horses. Have you ever asked a good friend, or you know, Annabelle Neesham, when they've got a runner coming up that you might like, say, hey, how do you think this will go? Do you think it's got a good chance? And they've actually given you a bum steer and told you that, no, we're not betting today?
No, not at all.
Really?
I'm in the inner sanctum, Michael.
What are you referring to, Michael?
Well, there's a horse that you might have had running on Sunday, Turfy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to remember what I said to you.
Which I think it could be quite a nice little horse. Now, I sent you a text message on Sunday and said, hi, Turfy, are we backing yours today?
Yes.
Your response, nah, just watching. I think the fave might be a little quick. This is what occurred.
I am so grateful and almost taken for granted, I think, how much he's a part of my development.
Well, no, that was it. That's not it. That's a mistake we call in the game.
Yes.
Turfy's horse, which is called?
Katsu.
Katsu. This is what happened.
Katsu's unwinding. It's gone past Miss Belvini. Further back to Balakwa. Balaba General about to be collared by Katsu on the outside. Katsu raced past Abba General. Trying hard upper east side with Miss Belvini, but to Katsu. Sun Samurai along the rails late. Katsu, he was soft in the finish. That was a good win.
Never, ever going to get beaten and was well backed as well.
You did some selective editing with a text message because I said, favourite might be a little bit quick, but he'll be in the finish for sure. Anyway.
You've got a nice horse.
I didn't back it, and I didn't.
You don't need to back it.
He's an immature sort of horse, so, you know, I just was happy to see how he. I didn't want to soil anyone into him. I didn't back him, so I didn't want to soil you into him either, much to both of our chagrin.
He's a nice horse, though, Turfy.
Yep.
Speaking of nice horses, Lizzie, who's the horse you want to take out of Flemington from Saturday?
Oh, I think of them all, I mean, I think Giga Kixamo's the one who obviously unbeaten and he's the most progressive. He goes into an Everest, I believe, so that's exciting. You'll certainly he'll know where he is when he heads towards an Everest. Out of Saturday, I think Giga Kick is the one. I also thought Private Eye has come back as good as he's ever come back.
Tiffy, are you surprised they're going down the Everest route with Giga Kick? He could have raced against the same company in a Coolmore, even though he's a gelding.
Yeah, all the owners, all the breeders would be happy he's going to the Everest,
yes,
and not the Coolmore.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, it's revolting prize money. It's extraordinary prize money, isn't it? So, not that the owner needs a quid.
No.
I always think, if I own him, what would I do? I think I'd probably run him in the Everest.
Mm.
Yeah. The Everest is a serious race. I mean, the Coolmore is as well, but he's a gelding, so there's not the residual stud value if he wins the race, so why not chase the greedy bucks?
And it's a huge tick for Clayton Douglas, isn't it, Lizzie, to think that he's got a horse that's 4 from 4, unbeaten, when it was just a couple of years ago he was winning Grand Annuals as a jockey, to do this now as a trainer.
Yeah, he's managed him really well because the first time that I ever saw him, he was quite a light, lean-looking gelding. And then on Saturday, he looked as though he's really enjoyed being in work and he's strengthened and he's heading in the right direction. I actually couldn't believe he was the same horse that I saw in the winter. So, yeah, I mean, he's done a marvellous job with him. And I'm interested what Turfy thinks, whether he thinks he will measure up in an Everest against those hard-headed sprinters.
Well, that's a good point because even the seasoned sprinters can't measure up against Nature Strip. I don't think Nature Strip's got this almost like residual sort of black mark over him from some of his early defeats. His last 2 years has been spectacular,
yep.
Nature Strip. Mm. He's just an absolute superstar. And you know, I think they're fighting out second again. You know, he's just, we're talking a horse who may have had, he must have been in what, Lizzie, his eighth preparation, something like that?
Yep, he's an 8 year old now, so he's been going since he was, you know, yearling. And he's quite an incredible horse, I agree. He's been very consistent the last couple of years. He was a little bit inconsistent early on, which he just did things wrong and overdid it. But since Chris has worked him out the last couple of years, and that's four preparations, he's just has not got it wrong each and every time. And he's as good on the dry as he is on the wet. And he breaks her heart. He's learnt to settle.
Mm.
He looks as though he just is absolutely thriving. And I think this time around, going into this first up run, he's more forward than he's ever been in the spring because he had that trip to Europe, and he's been a bit more forward since that preparation that he had. He raced, you know, passed into the winter months or the summer months in the UK. So he's going to be very hard to beat. The only X factor, I think, of the race is a horse like Jackano.
Yeah, Jackano, yeah, sure. And you know that phrase, Mickey, you know that phrase, one of the mysteries of the turf? Sam's image is one of the mysteries of the turf.
Exactly.
Not once.
But twice.
But twice he beat Nature Strip as a young horse. And look, he's a handy horse. Sam's image, he won at Moonee Valley only 3 weeks ago, the last race there on Fian Day. But and he's a good, handy city sprinter. But he's beaten
Nature Strip.
You can't say the best sprinter because we've been lucky enough to have your Black Caviars and so forth in recent times. But
best sprinter since Black Caviar.
But gee whiz. What about a race between Black Caviar and Nature Strip? How would that have measured up? I don't like those sorts of questions, but
I think she was untouchable.
Probably. But his last 2 years, he's been borderline untouchable.
Who are you with, Lizzie?
Oh, I think Black Caviar,
I think probably,
Hey, big morning out of Caulfield this morning. Caulfield Guineas is going to be an interesting race. Full field on Saturday. Unfortunately, we lost Aft Cabin. Which means, don't look at me like that, Turvey.
Oh, the rushing for phones and betting sites when the news came through.
Lizzie, we were doing our program, which has just kicked off last Saturday morning, the Saturday Contenders, when the news came through that Aft Cabin was out. And
had
sadly, last leg of a multi for one of us. And unfortunately, the news had filtered through after betting organisations had been aware of it as well. So it was a bit of a comical.
Well, I'll tell you what the problem was there, Lizzie, for all those people in at the studios on Saturday morning was, do I follow my responsibility as a broadcaster and as a journalist to reveal the news that Aft Cabin had a health issue and was no longer going to be running in the Caulfield Guineas, or should I try and get on into a market that still had him in there as favourite? That was a conundrum that a lot of people didn't deal with all that well. Me, on the other hand, I went straight to the betting side.
I was going to say, for most in racing media, it's a one-way street, that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I went straight to the sites.
You've got some Caulfield Guineas memories, Turvey, where you think a few short price favourites or good horses have got beaten in the Guineas.
Well, I was just trying to remember, without having any facts and figures in front of me, I'm sure Piero was one.
Yes.
Guarantee Kingston Town got... he may have run unplaced at a Caulfield Guineas, Kingston Town.
Couldn't get around Caulfield.
And I reckon So You Think got beaten, I think, maybe by Star Spangled Banner. In fact, I don't think he ran second either, So
no,
You
he
Think.
He ran about six or seven.
Yeah. So it just has been a funny race in that regard. And also, and not so much in recent years, but I remember as a young punter, two absolute, you know, 100 to 1 shots winning the race. Aberiddy was one, trained by Steve Watkins, I think, whose colours are still going around, blue with the yellow lance. He won, Aberiddy won at monstrous odds, and a horse called Bin Binga won, who was... trying to remember now. I think it was trained by a bloke named Frank Quan, Q-U-A-N, who I think may have had one or two boxes at Flemington, and I think was a taxi driver.
Really?
A little bit a la Joe Janiak. And I reckon Bin Binga may have been similar. Look, I might be wrong. I hope I'm, because I'm talking 40 years ago at least. But they were complete and utter, as we say, despised outsiders that won the call for Guineas.
I've just had a look here. Mighty Boss, obviously, was 101,
yeah,
2017.
The chestnut, yeah.
There was a horse called Bayside in 1952. You'd remember that, too.
No, I don't.
200 to 1. And the one that I I was 10 years of age, but I still vaguely remember this, and I've seen the replay a lot of times, and you would remember this. Aberready, 250 to 1.
I just mentioned it. He was the Steve Watkins horse. Yeah. And I'm sure that, I don't know whether it's your son or whatever, those colours are prevalent at the moment.
Luna Fox won a Guineas at 330 to 1 just recently too, didn't it?
So, for Terry O'Sullivan.
Are you going to be with the favourites on Saturday? Obviously, the barrier draws on.com in about an hour and a half's time, Lizzie, but... is it still the Blue Armies to lose with Golden Mile?
Look, he's a lovely horse, and I don't think he lost any admirers when he ran in the Golden Rose. I'm just really looking forward to having a look at them and seeing how they are all presented and parading. I'm a big fan of Berkeley Square. I thought hasn't done anything wrong. Golden Mile brings that Sydney form, and he's certainly one of the main ones to beat as well. So it's also I'm also hearing about this rain that is on the way, so that does throw a few spanners in the works as far as wet tracks might be concerned. But look, it's a shame that we do miss Aft Cabin from the race, but it's still a great race with some really nice horses that need to take that next step.
Redoute's Choice,
Testarossa,
in my mind, is one of the great races I've ever seen. Aided by one of the great calls as well, yeah, by Greg. But the bottom line was those two spectacular colts who both became, Redoute's Choice, obviously more so than Testa, but great stallions, really. I mean, Testarossa was a really successful stallion as well. Two great jockeys, two great horses, great race call. It's one of the great races of all time, the Corfu Guineas that year.
It's one of the great races altogether. Lizzie, I know you've got to go, but just quickly, I want to get your thoughts on the Might and Power, which is a mini Cox Plate on Saturday.
Yeah, really. If they all accept, yeah, very excited to see them all face up against each other, especially Animo and Zaki, I think, is terrific matchup. And, yeah, it is a mini Cox Plate. We've been waiting for them to meet, haven't we? And there's nowhere to hide now. It's time that they take each other on. So, yes, at the moment, you probably lean towards Animo. The way that he's been racing, he hasn't really put a foot wrong. But then you've got to remember that he came out of his last start with that little bit of an injury cloud. And even though they seem to think there's nothing wrong with him and he's pulled up fine and he's working fine, you never really know whether that little niggle is there until they're put under race day pressure. So that's just a little niggly thought in the back of my mind, and I'm sure their mind as well. But you do know that Zaki's got room for improvement, and Alligator Blood, of course, well, he just really has gone to another level after winning last start. So, yep, great race, and looking forward to seeing if they all accept.
It's quite amazing to think that Annabelle Neesham could have four runners in the Cox Plate. Zaki, Mowunga, top ranked, I think, will definitely get in. Now he's an Epsom winner, and the international My Oberon as well.
Yeah, it is amazing. But the Cox Plate has been won by a female before, twice actually.
Pinker
Pinker was Gregory Rowell.
Yeah.
we're talking about a trainer, exactly, not a horse.
there was a horse from New South Wales, country trainer from New South Wales.
Yes, yeah. I did some research and I have to grab it up, but it has been won twice by a female. Jockey has never won it. And Gay has never won it as well. So
Rising Fear amazing. Or something or other, was it? The name of the...
We'll have to do
it. I can't remember.
I thought a New Zealand woman trainer may have won it back in the...
Yes, that's right.
Was it the Phantom Check? No, or Solve It, was it? I'm not sure.
I made that blue because I was just reading a text.
Deirdre Stein in 1985 of Rising Prince.
Rising Prince, I was close. She was from Bathurst.
Solve It.
There you go. We were both on the mark. Rising Prince and Solve It.
I think she trained at Bathurst, Deirdre Stein.
Gee whiz. Just one quick one before I let you go. Does My Oberon...
Mahogany. I've been reminded by Greg Hall about Mahogany.
Mahogany's
winning.
Win. Should it get a run, or could the committee, as they are able to, not have a horse in the Melbourne, in the Cox Plate? Because My Oberon, just looking through its form, it's won a Group 3, I think, is the highest rated race it's won. It has competed in the Group 1 Prince of Wales overseas.
Look, there was a Cox Plate a few years ago where there were three in it. Sea Burge was one of them. There was a horse starting with H. I can't think of its name. I think there was 300 to one shots. All
Generation got in last year. Wasn't
all
it?
In yeah. stated in the Cox Plate that particular year. When you remember that
Cole Diesel.
Ian McEwan wouldn't put Cole Diesel in after winning a Turek and a Caulfield Cup. He said it wasn't good enough. Things have changed.
What do you think, Lizzie?
Oh, I leave that to the committee, Michael. I do a bit of fence sitting there.
We've got Turfy here. You're not allowed to fence it.
Well, exactly. So I'll play devil's advocate and Turfy can get stuck into them.
I love it. Lizzie, appreciate your time as always and loving the Through the Lens program. Now that Turfy's doing this program with Sharky and myself on Saturday morning, should we set Turfy a task every week?
I think you should, yes, absolutely.
Well, I
Something that will make him really grumpy.
I saw you trying to park a float, Liz. So
yes,
don't ever go at me. That was borderline absurd, your performance.
I used to, when I worked at Lindsay Park, I used to ask the float drivers in the car park to reverse my float for me, so I knew yeah. that wasn't going to be something that I was very good at.
Good
I outsourced.
Do you want to say goodbye to Jane?
Bye, Liz.
Bye, Turf.
Good on you, Lizzie. Lizzie Gels from racing.com there. Hey, just quickly before we wrap up, this has gone very quick. I know a lot of listeners out there love to work out what and how you do your form. And you gave us some great insight on Spring Ticket on Saturday because you walk the track every yeah. week. And you picked up that the inside was the place to be at Flemington very early.
It wasn't so much it was the inside, but what I learnt from walking the track. And it was because that meeting that had been held there, the Oaks and Derby prelude meeting, it was a heavy track that day when the rail was at 14, unlike last year when it wasn't a heavy track. So you could quite clearly see that out four wide and beyond was going to be difficult. So you needed to be in the first half dozen. And really, of the 27 races, 27 place getters, I don't know how many horses came from worse yep. than like, I'd imagine it would be a handful at most. So the first thing I do as a form student is do a speed map. And then when you sort of think there's going to be a pattern, that sort of helps blend in to your where they're going to be in the run and helps you sort of, you know, price them and, you know, rate them if you like. So the first thing I think that your average punter who's trying to get a little bit better at it is to try and do your own speed maps and try and work out where they're going to be in the run. So then when any pattern does – and there's plenty of meetings, a number of meetings where there aren't – where there is no speed map, is no pattern. But when there is a pattern, the speed map becomes very, very important.
And then what do you do re your pricing?
Well, you know, you make blues because, you know, like if you on Wednesday night, for instance, I was very keen on Exalita.
Yeah.
And then when it became so late, it appeared to be you needed to be on pace, I really warmed to Pride of Jenny. And so did the punters. I mean, she was 5.50 into 3.40. I didn't factor in that she was going to miss the start, which I don't really think she's done before. She actually ran really well, yeah. by the way, Pride of Jenny. But that sort of blew my markets out because I had Pride of Jenny. I marked her a clear favourite after the pattern presented itself to me. So you can outsmart yourself, which I did on the weekend.
Are you pretty fastidious that if you mark a horse you think is a $4 chance it comes up 3.50, you don't back it under what you mark?
It's really difficult. It's a difficult thing to do.
Mm.
But you've got to stick by value. And it's even harder these days because we used to bet into far more competitive markets than the corporates provide us with these days. And that's a tax thing and a number of other issues. But that's the reality is the markets aren't as punter-friendly as they were when I was doing it for a living, if you like. So you have to be pretty firm with, you know, your odds. I mean, you know, if you're going to take $1.90 on a coin toss, you're going to end up with a seat out of your pants, even if you're really fancy heads.
Are you a bit of an odds on look on punter?
Generally, but you know, if it's $1.90 and you think it should be $1.50, well, then you might as well bet. You know, I think the bigger the over, the bigger the bet. I mean, if you think a horse should be 6-1 and it's 12-1,
do you bet more?
Double your bet.
Do you get
if you're getting a big over?
Do you get worried by a drift?
On the exchange, I do get worried if there's a drift on the exchange because the exchange is a pretty accurate market, I reckon.
Mm.
But you know, you've got so many factors these days dictating markets. Factors that we never dealt with. These syndicates, you know, with their computers and algorithms, and this and that. I mean, these mobs rate every race in Australia today. I mean, I don't know how many race meetings are in Australia today, but they'll have their own markets for every race today. There's not some bloke sitting there doing form. It's all fed into the machinery algorithms that they've got and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, they are dictating the markets today, not one or two punters, individuals.
I want to talk more to you about that next time or on the weekend when we do the spring ticket as well, because it's absolutely fascinating. Do you punt every day?
Try not to. Who's asking?
No.
No, I don't. You can't. I mean, I have tracks I refuse to bet at. So, you know, when the meeting's at those particular tracks, I'm quite happy to, you know, have a hit of golf or something. Yeah. Or, you know, go to the botanical garden and feed the swans. And you can't. I mean, you can't possibly do form 7 days a week. It is physically impossible, let alone review a week's meeting, which you have to review. You know, just because you haven't bet at Mildura today, let's say, but when a horse comes from Mildura and runs at Bendigo in 2 weeks' time, you've got to sort of go back and have a look at that race. Could it actually win that race? Yeah. What was the pattern that day? All that sort of stuff. It's very, very labour intensive and time consuming.
Will you be betting at Mildura today?
Possibly. I haven't got much on today.
All right, very good. Hey. That's just flown by. Turfy talk, Turfy time. And there's going to be a lot more of it on Saturday on the spring ticket. Really looking forward to having you back there with the team on Saturday, Turfy.
Thanks, Maggie.
Next time I send you a message, just be a bit more buoyant, a bit more strong.
Sorry, he's running on Cup Day, I think, actually, that
is
horse.
He?
And,
wow.
He's a very progressive horse, but he's got a bit to learn.
All right, very good. Dr. Turf, always a pleasure. Hey, we've got a George Prize, a $100 gift voucher from the George Hotel in South Melbourne, right opposite the Melbourne Market, the best place to go for all fun and games. And I'm going to give it to a listener who was the first one to text in that Moira Murdoch trained Solvent and said, actually stayed with David Brightoak down at Mornington. So a lovely piece of information. Text us back. We'll send you out a $100 voucher to the George Hotel. Time for the news. On the other side of that, we'll have all the winners at Mildura today.